Morris Mizalowski is the founder of Eye on the Future, and he spent the last 34 years predicting global future trends, and he's here with us tonight. Good evening, Morris.
Happy New Year, and welcome to the future,
Kate. Happy New Year to you too. It's great to be here in the future.
Isn't it incredible how fast 2014's come around?
Yes. Yes, it is. And so I sort of feel as though I should almost be asking you what I needed to know in 2013 that I might have missed. But let's just put all that aside.
Yeah, we'll play catch up later.
And move forward. Let's actually look back for a moment. What are the biggest trends of 2013 that we should have been up with?
Well, the biggest trend, I think, is something that we take for granted, and that was the move away from the fixed technology computer onto the mobile device. I know we've been doing it, seems forever, but for most people, really only 6 or 7 years. It was that Apple device that pushed the majority of the globe off their fixed boxes onto something they carry in their handbags, their wallets, and their pockets. What we saw last year for the first time was that all of the stats, the search engine stats, the usage stats, the purchase stats, everything was higher on mobile devices. And really what we've done is to change who we are, what we are, how we shop, how we think, information we think is important. All of that has changed dramatically. And last year to me was the watershed moment for that.
So if you're still a person who says, I just need a phone to call and maybe text, you're going to have to get rid of that old phone? Is that what you're saying?
No, I don't think so. I'm never a baby in bathwater person. Human beings are wonderful. We live in a continuum. For some people, that's the perfect phone to have. They need not have anything more. They don't need any more and shouldn't have it. But for many others, they enjoy or they find purpose in having a phone that does more than just receive phone calls, and they like to stay connected, be able to search. But increasingly, we're going to be pushed into that direction.
So how do you, if you start looking at 2014, presumably you've been thinking about 2014 for more than the last few hours.
About 30 years.
Yeah. So how do you start to think what's going to happen in this particular time frame? What do you base your predictions on?
I come from a really quirky background, and I consider it to be an anthropological one. For me, it's really important to understand human nature. I love technology. I really get caught up on gadgets, have boxes of them, and know lots of stuff about it. But my question always is, will this tickle our fancy? Will it be something that we want to have ongoing beyond the fad status? So really, when I begin to look at what I think is ahead, and I kind of know what's ahead because I talk to these people, it's my daily activity. Thankfully, I get to see inside these factories and warehouses, talk to the greatest minds on the planet, I think, about what they're predicting, what they're innovating, what they think they're going to invent. But always comes back to the human factor. Is it going to make a big difference in our lives? So when I come to put together a list like this or work with clients, it's always people-oriented.
So who has... I just got distracted for a second there. Who has the greatest mind in the planet?
Oh, I don't think there is a greatest mind.
I was just wondering.
I think there's a collective mind. And that's what I love at the moment too. For the last few years and moving forward, which is one of the trends, we're really coming into this age of collective wisdom where we no longer have to find necessarily the one person or the one organization that knows or has everything. We collectively can come up with a solution. We're doing that in medicine now. We find a great scientist, a research person, somebody who's come up with a thought that they think can move it forward. And unlike what we did not so long ago, where we had to keep it in-house, we had to patent it, we had to come up with the entire solution ourselves, which meant often it was a long lead time, we're now publishing, or they're publishing much quicker, they're sharing within their community much quicker, and they're really standing on the shoulders of each other, which is why we're seeing innovation come to the market much quicker than we ever have before.
You're listening to Nightlife on ABC Local Radio. My name's Kate O'Toole, and Morris Mizalowski is here. He's the founder of Eye on the Future, and he is discussing all the trends that will shape 2014. I know, we've only just arrived, but still, it's nice to know what's in front of you for this year. And your outlook, Morris, is extensive for 2014. You believe, for instance, that we will be in a post-technology boom.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Strange thing to say at this stage when we seem to be drowning in technology. But what I think's happened, and what I hope has happened, I must say, is that we are past what I call the kid in the candy store. We have been besotted by these boxes and tools and technologies for almost a decade now. We ooh and we are every time we see them, and we run and we try and do everything with them. I think that for many people, we're well past that. We just kind of say, well, it's another piece of technology. It's another box. Love it. What can it do for me? And it's more about the end result now than about having the box itself. There was a day where we had to have that box almost like a badge of honour.
Yeah, status symbol.
A status symbol, exactly. And it was really important for many people, for whatever reason, to think that they had the latest and the best and the greatest. The conversation now, more often than not, and especially for 2014, is going to be about, can I get done what I need to get done? Don't really care about the brand or the technology or the box that's doing it. I just want to get to the end result.
Does that mean it will put more pressure on manufacturers to make sure that the, you know, the newest release does significantly differ from the previous one if they can't guarantee people just won't want the latest?
I think so. And we're starting to see that with our really big brands, the brands that used to cause mayhem in the street when they released a new product, literally blocks around, people around the block, I should say, are now not getting the same result. If we look at Microsoft last year, Microsoft put out a new Windows version, which in its heyday was heralded on all the media, was a big announcement, a big activity. Nowadays came and went with a whimper. Hardly anyone even knew it came around.
Does that mean there's a sort of a high that you get from owning a new piece of technology, which is amazing, which I've noticed in the last few years, that's going to fade for me, do you think?
I do think so. I think what you'll get the high out of, and you'll actually get more of them, is the apps and the things that you can download or do with them. And I think that's where we're headed now. And so I hope that's where we're headed, because we really shouldn't be all that excited about the box itself. We need to be excited about what, if anything, it does for our lives. And that is where I think we're headed from now on.
Keen to know what you think will be the hallmarks of 2014. What are you expecting? What do you predict for this year ahead? If you'd like to join the conversation, 1300 800 222 is the number to call, or you could send a text to 0467 922 702. Feel free to join the conversation with Morris Mizalowski, who is discussing his trend predictions for 2014. One of them is that you think that nostalgia will fade. What sort of nostalgia are you talking about?
Over the last 5 years, no surprise to anybody, we've been through, this is a technical term, a yuck period. We really have had the economy down. We've had all sorts of doom and gloom. We've thought the worst and often predicted the worst was going to happen. We're at the end of that thinking phase. For many of us, it was a notion, not that the world wasn't as right as it could have been, but it was more a psychological one. We were really thinking it down and we were in a bad spot, and that was not a good place for us to begin to move forward, begin to innovate, and begin to fix or remedy. What we've seen over the last 6 months or so, and definitely in 2014, is the beginning of what I call a new normal. We've accepted that period exists. We know there's going to be ramifications, political, social, economic, ongoing, but we want to get on with our lives. We want to have a better life and to build it. As part of that, nostalgia is normally attached to it. When we go through yuck times, we tend to go back to tradition. We tend to go back to those rose-coloured glasses, even though they weren't wonderful days. We think they were the 60s, the 80s, the 20s, whatever it was for us. And our fashion, our food, our thinking, our movies were all very much over the last 5 years built around those halcyon, romantic days. They're leaving us, and we're really moving into a new period now where we don't require the nostalgia anymore. We're a bit more sturdy, and we're willing to build things that are sleek, authentic, fresh, and tomorrow-worthy.
So how will that manifest itself in fashion, for instance?
So we're beginning to see some interesting fashion trends, and fashion's actually one of the easier things to predict because it requires very little energy from me, and a matter of looking at what the fashion houses have already done, because they prepare 6 to 12 months in advance. So what we're seeing, or what I've seen over the last 6 months and moving forward, is things that are called strategic transparency. Especially in women's fashion, there seems to be in the garment itself these panels that appear to be not there. They appear to be transparent. And more clothes have those panels built in. So that's a big push forward for 2014.
Great.
We're starting to see that across the
Burberry. That's the last thing that I want to wear down the shops.
Well,
a dress with some bits missing.
It may not be the best fashion for everybody, but certainly on the catwalk, it seems to be where we're headed. And definitely walking around with my wife and my daughter, I've seen dresses in many of the shops that have that sort of activity on them.
Will 2014 mean the end of the hipster beard?
The bid is actually a push back to nostalgia as well. So I think we've got about another year or so in tops. I'm hoping not. I'm really hoping not. But I think we've
because
got 6 to 12
months
left.
Because you like the bid?
No, because I want it to go.
Oh, right. You want it to be shorter than that.
I do.
If you've been putting off growing the beard, then you better do it now. You've only got 6 months or so.
Well, again, continuum of life. Everyone's entitled to have a beard or not to have a beard as they want. But as a fashion statement, I think because it's part of nostalgia, we'll start to slowly see it fade out from its mainstream acceptance and move on.
What about food? I mean, do we have the same sorts of fashions in food as we do in clothing?
Yeah, we do actually. We tend to change our food quite often, our food requirements often. Next year, or this year I should say, is going to be one that's going to take us into all sorts of new realms. One of the ones, in no particular order that I like, is that the tea we drink, is coming into huge fashion again. And a lot of the predictions are that, this is a strange thing to say, we'll overtake coffee in the next 12 to 18 months as a fad drink. So it'll be one of these year to 2 years hype around tea. So that's it.
So instead of catching up for a coffee, we will see more people catching up for a cup of tea.
Absolutely. So in the States, we're already starting to see a lot more tea houses opening up as against coffee houses. And that seems to be a trend through Europe as well. We haven't seen it in Australia much yet, but I'm saying that over the next year, I think we're going to see more and more of those. We're going to see things like the superfoods, which we've had a lot of over the last few years. Didn't even know what they were 3 years ago.
I don't know that they're real.
Well, I'm kind of with you. I think it's partly marketing. I mean, they're great foods, not saying they're not, certainly full of nutrition, but the word super always worries me, but that's what they've been titled. So the last 3 years or so, we've seen superfoods, so we certainly can't miss out. Last year we had kale, for instance, and quinoa. They were the two big ones for last year. The ones I'm told for this year that we're going to see are called freka and teff.
Okay, so freka, isn't that like a buckwheat?
Yes, I think they're both that kind of wheat thing. But again, perhaps someone can enlighten us and tell us more about them. But freka and teff.
Oh, do. If you've been ahead of the trend for ages, if freka and teff is so 2010 for you, and you can enlighten us a little, 1-300-800-222 is the number to call. Do join the discussion, by the way. If you've got a suggestion, your prediction for what will be big in 2014, I would love to hear from you as I speak with Morris Mizalaski, who is a futurist here on Nightlife. Interesting. Interesting to think. So food will, there'll be sort of a shift in the exciting fad foods. There'll be a shift towards tea. What about entertainment in 2014?
So entertainment, I think we're going to see, well, we've got a number of blockbusters coming up, so that genre still seems to be in there, you know, whatever it is, number 3, so Back to the Future, number 27, we've got a lot of those coming in, so there still seems to be energy in that, but that's really a pushback to the days where the economy in that marketplace was tight and had to make sure that the films were going to work. So I think we're going to see the tail end of it over the next year or two as well, and maybe we'll see some more risk. There's a lot of independent films on the horizon as well. Now that you and I are more accustomed to being able to pull out a mobile phone or carry a camera with us, we actually think that we are, or possibly maybe, filmmakers. So there are a lot of these indie films, independent films, that are on the horizon, and I think we're going to see more and more of those. And also, not so much even the films we're going to see, but the ways we're going to see them. So we'll still go to cinema, we'll still watch TV, but I think less and less. It's more that we're going to watch films or entertainment on a device we carry around with us, our mobile phone, our tablet or whatever else, and we're going to download more and more. So we'll see streaming become more ordinary. For some listeners, it has been for quite a while, but I think it'll become more mainstream.
Because we have seen, in 2013, we saw things like the release of an entire TV series in one day. They release the entire season and it goes online and you buy it as you will.
Yep. And that was Netflix did that with a number of their series, and they've got a couple slated for this year where they're going to do exactly the same. We're going to see more of those things. YouTube is pushing into this space as well, so they want to produce not the full-length movies that we're used to, but certainly movies of entertainment value, and we're going to see those come onto the horizon as well. So more of a shift in the way we watch movies and the sort of things we call a movie. So the hour and a half, 2 hours will be around, definitely be around for a very long time, but we'll also become more accustomed to watching those shorter, sharper, indie-type movies.
And are we watching them on a small screen in our hand while we also have the TV on in the background? while we're also doing five other things and Skyping our mates all over the world? I mean, is this...
Yes. Now, that's one of the stats that really snuck up on me last year. That the stat, this is an Australian survey that was done in the middle of last year, shows that 70% of people that were watching a traditional television screen had a second screen in their hand or nearby and were using it during that period. Quite extraordinary that we're now used to and becoming quite accustomed to watching one screen but having another one, at least one other one, in our vicinity and doing things with it. And if you look at mainstream television, they're actually encouraging us in a lot of the things they produce to do that, because they're giving us hashtags to be able to talk in, they're giving us opportunity to be able to tweet in or do other things as we watch. So absolutely, we're now multitasking as we watch.
You say that 2014 is going to be the year of the entrepreneur and also the intrapreneur. What does that mean?
Yeah, the entrepreneur is a word we're quite accustomed to. Intrapreneur is really somebody that works inside a corporation, so a full-time employee, but they kind of take on a different role. Instead of the traditional, and I know none of us are because we all put 120% into what we do, but instead of the traditional role of 9-to-5 employee, this person's role is to really be an entrepreneur within the organization, to look beyond the silos, beyond what it traditionally does, beyond the tradition of how it does it, and to come up with new solutions, new products, new ideas, new thinking, and really just put some more energy into the place. So intrapreneurs are one of those new fancy titles we're seeing.
Interesting, because sometimes it can be hard to quantify the benefits of a person in that kind of a role. You know, what's your KPI for an intrapreneur?
Well, you're right, it's difficult, but many of the things we do now in business are becoming increasingly difficult to get a KPI on. That's a key performance indicator, something we can measure people by. But that doesn't mean they're not worthy. Perhaps it means we need to rethink what's important to us. And this numbers measurement system is only relatively new. You know, it's a 20, 30-year construct. It's not as if it's always been that way. So, again, not good or bad, but it doesn't have to be that way necessarily.
Another thing that you predict for 2014 is the idea that corporations are rising over governments, an age where business is more influential than governments, at least some governments. What are you talking about there? How will that manifest itself in the next 12 months?
Sounds Orwellian, doesn't it? But what I mean by that is the governments will still have a place. We will still elect them. They will still be important. They will still govern us. I'm not for a moment thinking they're going to disappear. But what we're seeing and will continue to see more of is that the corporations are now moving into the realms of what government traditionally did. Space exploration is a great one. It used to be the purview of only government, American, for instance, in the beginning, and Russia, and as you said, at the entree, also into China. We're now seeing individual corporations going into space, and we will see much of the space exploration, certainly much of the space movement, in other words, going up and down, backwards and forwards, being done by private enterprise. Health, transport, citizen welfare, a lot of the traditional purviews of government are now moving more and more into the hands of corporations.
And,
I was going to say, these things are not necessarily good or bad. I mean, there are issues around all of them, as are all the things we're saying tonight. But we're finding that often the government struggles to be able to provide this. They often struggle to innovate or to do it quickly enough for what we want, or they can't recognise the opportunity. So in goes private individuals.
Yeah, it is interesting when you think about the kind of tentacles that individual companies can have all around the world and the influence that they can have. I guess I'm thinking we're talking just a couple of days ago about how people perceive the company Google, for example, and the sorts of collection of data that they've been involved in. This is something that we're going to have to become, what, more used to in 2014, or will companies have to respond differently to us?
I think more used to is definitely something we will have to do. I think we need to be aware of it, is what we need to be. Whether we accept it or not is really a community response to it. Google's a really interesting corporation. Again, putting aside any politics or good or bad about them, but Google recognizes exactly the opportunity that they have as a large corporation that stores a lot of data to be able to move beyond the traditional search engine. Google at the moment is really heavily involved in health, really heavily involved in robot. They've spent billions of dollars in the last 12 months buying up robot companies. We'll have semi and fully autonomous cars in the next decade, cars that drive themselves or are capable of it, and Google is one of the big players in that. when you look around at many of the horizon points, you actually see a Google company at that point doing stuff. So they're a really interesting example of how they are ahead of governments and often pushing that road more heavily than the government might.
It is a little bit scary, isn't it?
Scary is possibly one way to look at it, and yes, it could be. Again, that's why I keep pushing back. It's up to people. We should never, and we never have, just accept this for the sake of it. We need to think about what its ramifications are, its implications are, and certainly if we think they're bad, to rally against them. And we can do that now better than we ever have done before. We've seen that we've seen collective power bring down governments, change politics, do all kinds of things. So please, let's not accept this as if we don't think this is a good thing to do, but it is on the horizon of them being involved, as are lots of other companies. I don't see it as sinister. I rarely do. But you're right. It has the possibility, as does everything, to get out of control.
You're listening to Nightlife. Kate O'Toole with you. Good to be with you on this first day of 2014, a day when we're looking forward over what this year will bring for you and for me, with futurist Morris Mizalowski. He's a founder of Eye on the Future and sharing some of his predictions for 2014 with you tonight. You can share your predictions too. Perhaps you're horrified at the prediction Morris has had for the hipster beard. You think perhaps it ought to live longer than the next 6 to 12 months. That's a sentence he's given it. Or perhaps you have a prediction of your own. 1-300-800-222 if you'd like to join the conversation. You've also mentioned the idea of this trend of crowd companies is going to grow in the next 12 months, Morris. Why is that?
Now, crowd companies go back to a point we were talking about earlier, that we have now the new thinking around management, that we don't have to have it all, do it all, and know it all. When I started up, if the company wasn't capable of doing it, then really it wasn't able to move into that sphere. It looked bad to bring in other partners. It looked like a sign of weakness. Now the largest of corporations, right down to the smallest one-person embryonic startup, looks around and says, these are my capabilities. This is what I know really, really well. Who can I partner with? Who can I joint venture with? Who can I come in and out of this capability with and put together a new product or an offering? That's called crowd companies, where a group of people or a group of companies come together, they have a particular objective in mind, and they're not a long-term activity necessarily. So they might go and do other things on the side as well, but in that collective, they're able to do something that individually they couldn't do by themselves. It's great opportunities also for the small players, for the one-offs, for the small business to get involved in being able to do something perhaps a bit larger, a bit broader, a bit scarier than they might have otherwise taken on.
And there's individuals with different crowdfunding opportunities. I've noticed, particularly over the last 12 to 18 months, that's really... I seem to get an email every second day saying, please help me make my album or fund this creative idea that I have, or I've got this excellent idea for business. Would you like to get involved in this?
That's taken off. That really is incredible. It's come from really a non-conversation only 18 months ago to exactly as you've said, many people, most people are aware that these things exist. There are websites where you can go in and you can put up your project, your idea, something that you want to bring to fruition but don't have the resources, whether that's money, time, people, or whatever else you need, and ask other people to become involved in it. And traditionally it is looking for money. So these sites have just gone from nothing to being a mainstream business funding possibility, and we're beginning to see lots of new companies, products and ideas come to market, and they're actually used as a marketing tool, so people are telling you that this was crowd-funded.
Yes, as in trying to convince you that enough people thought this was a good idea that they were happy to fund it themselves, so why don't you buy this product or get involved in this idea as well. You're listening to Nightlife. I'm speaking with Morris Mizalowski, who is a futurist. He's sharing some of his predictions for 2014 with you today. I am keen to know from you, what's your prediction for 2014, the trend you think will take off? What will it bring for you? Any predictions, by the way, Morris Mizalowski, on the sorts of sunglasses we'll be wearing, just while we're talking about shades?
Yes, 3D printed ones.
Oh, really?
Yes, I've actually seen a pair that have been 3D printed. It's quite extraordinary.
Well, 3D printing sort of blows my mind a bit, actually. You know, the idea that you can use it to print living tissue. I mean, what are the limits? Are there limits with this sort of technology?
The answer is I don't think there are limits because we're talking about the human imagination. So at the moment, we certainly have constraints. There are certainly not much that we can do. Much of what can be done is really in the imagination. So a 3D printer is really like the old dot matrix printers going back to the 80s. The difference is that we take an object, we make a digital scan of it, put it inside of our computer screen, and we can adjust it to be whatever we want. And we then send that image across to what is a dot matrix printer, and it will print it out in plastic or in ceramics or whatever element choice we've made. And over a period of time, it might take minutes or hours, we will have a 3D object that we can then use, absolutely use. So if it's a cup, we can drink from it. If it's an object, we can use it for whatever it was made for. So these 3D printers have been on the horizon for about 15 or 20 years. That's the strange thing, but we've only seen them in the last 2 years as becoming viable and mainstream. In the States, we've already got retailers like Staples, which is the equivalent of Officeworks. We've got eBay, we've got other companies, Amazon, who are beginning to sell them and their products. So they're becoming more and more ordinary. And certainly I think this year will just heighten that again. We'll start to see some of their purposes, start to see it in retail, and we'll begin to start looking at what we might use it for.
And of course, there's been headlines made when somebody printed off a working gun on a 3D printer, and there was great concern about that. But what are some of the possible benefits of this technology that could be achievable within the next 12 months?
So you're absolutely right. Look, we will always find with every technology that somebody comes along and uses it for an evil purpose. And this gun thing just took too much emphasis away from what it can do. In the same time period, and we've got very little conversation, was this wonderful story out of the UK where a child was born, a young female child was born. She had a damaged trachea, and traditionally that meant that she would not have a long life. They were able to, in an operation, to remove her trachea that was faulty, to make a digital scan of that and to fix its fault on the screen, and then to print off a trachea and to put it back into her body. And they did that within the space of about 2 hours. And that trachea has now been accepted by her body. It's the windpipe. It's been now been accepted into her body and is growing as if it was always there. And she will not apparently ever need another operation. It will just be a normal piece of her body. We're seeing it being used for hips, for the same thing, to replace hips. Now, this is not widestream yet. This is not as if we can walk in and ask for it. These are normally university hospitals that are trialing this and moving it along. I read an article only yesterday where this year they're planning to print the first 3D kidney as well. Again, many years off from becoming mainstream, but we're already trialing, already looking at the purposes of printing hearts, kidneys, all sorts of body spare parts, bones. We're also using it now to be able to print objects as we need them on demand. So we're not able to get to a part for a particular device or product that might be old or might be difficult to find a spare part for, we can print it on demand. I think we'll see lots of opportunities for this kind of a process. As well as traditional manufacturing, it'll be part of that continuum of what we can offer people.
Is this going to be like a kind of industrial revolution? If you can use these printers to make so many things, what will happen to the people who make so many things?
Yeah, I do think it's an industrial revolution because of the nature of the way that we will change what we see as important in manufacturing. This is a really difficult question. It's one of these dilemmas that we have. We have technology that's going to change some of the way we manufacture, and because of that, we are going to, I think, displace some of the skill sets, some of the jobs that we currently have, but we will also bring in new ones. 3D printing, like everything, is a two-edged sword. I think that what we'll see over the next decade or so is we will have traditional manufacturing as we've always had, which is mass produced. We will have that and require that. But we will also see more and more in retail, in medical, in other places where we will print on demand. So we'll be able to walk in, we'll be able to find a garment that we want to dress, for instance. And instead of it traditionally being made from cloth and sewn, we will be able to print it in real time. And that will be made to fit our body. So we'll scan our body, we'll choose the design of the dress or the trousers or whatever we want, and it will literally print it for us in real time, and we'll walk out with that finished garment ready to wear, for instance.
I'm speaking with futurist Morris Mizalowski. We're talking about the amazing technology of 3D printers, which is going to escalate, no doubt, over 2014 and beyond. You use a phrase called thought metamorphosis, and 2014 is going to be a place where that's going to happen. What do you mean by that? Where does that become important in relation to personal data?
Yes, I thought metamorphosis is something that I think most of us have been doing over the last few years and haven't really noticed. Whenever I ask somebody how many phone numbers they remember, very few of us actually remember any of them. And if we do, it's one or two. When I grew up, and I'm a baby boomer, we had to remember all our phone numbers. We had to know all our maths. We had to know all the grammar. I'm not saying we shouldn't still know that. But what we're increasingly doing now is actually putting that information inside of a mobile device, inside of some sort of technology. And we are quite accustomed to going to our mobile phone, pressing a button, and it rings mum or our husband or home or whatever it is we want, without even thinking what the phone number is. So for me, the next step really is in this thought metamorphosis, now that we've accepted that these devices carry that base sort of information, is that we are going to see these devices, with our permission and our desire, actually do a bit more thinking for us. And by that I mean that we'll be able to, and we can already get apps that do it, be able to understand what's happening around us if we're walking around a retail environment or if we're traveling or if we're at a friend's home. It'll know where we are, it'll know the sorts of things we want and what we like, and it will give us information particular to us on our screen, again, because we've asked it to do that. So we're going to get more specialized information. I call it synthetic thinking as well. So we're going to see more of this thought metamorphosis, where our devices we carry with us are going to give us more and more relevant information.
Not just advertising, because of course we've seen that already.
No, I think that the spruiking of it will actually become more and more difficult because we're making the choices of what information we want to see. Now, there will always be a choice between the two. So what I imagine is that we'll get to a time where if we choose, we'll be able to go into a site that will offer us advertising if that's what we want. And if we don't, then we'll be able to get that information in a different way, in a different sense. Some of the advertising is going to be something we want. So when we walk around retail, when we walk around a shopping centre, for instance, and we're looking for a particular item, or there is an item that we didn't know we needed but all of a sudden do because we've got the shoes that match the trousers but we haven't got the complete outfit and the outfit is actually inside of a store that we're walking by, it'll notify us that it's there. So it's really going to become more and more of an object that tells us what it thinks we need to know as we're walking around the world.
Nightlife with Kate O'Toole on ABC Local Radio.
Welcome to 2014. I hope you had a great celebration last night, and I hope you're having a lovely evening this evening as well. We are looking forward over what this year will bring. Futurist Morris Mizalowski is with me in the studio just discussing the sorts of trends that he predicts for 2014. It's interesting to think about how technology changed. It feels like the sort of things you're talking about, Morris, must be at least 5 or 10 years out in the future, and some of them maybe, but then when you look back, you think, actually, that all happened rather quickly. And with this number of devices in our lives increasing, number of phones and other devices that all seem to be connected, we'll be able to remotely control it sort of escalates again. We can remotely control even more things in our life. How's that going to shift?
Yeah, it seems like we're going to have an avalanche of these. So what's happening over the last little while is the ability for these devices we carry. So all of our inanimate objects that we now own are going to be online and searchable if we want them to be. The last 30 years we've put ourselves online. Most people we can do a search for and find out something about. What we've started to do, and this is called the Internet of Things, is to put these objects online, be able to search them, and then be able to control and manipulate them.
As in, so, I could punch my fridge into a search engine.
Well, absolutely. Now, again, your fridge will only allow you in. It's not going to allow the whole world in. So these things will have security around them. What we're able to do at the moment, and one of the things that are really flying off the shelf, so to speak, now, are devices that control our home. I do work with a number of builders looking forward to what we're going to need in our homes, and they tell me that right now, for the last 12 months, the greatest request they get for new homes is that they are automated. I want a home that automatically recognizes me, that I'm able to turn the lights on and off from a distance, I'm able to control the heating before I get there or when I'm lying in my bed. So they want these sorts of devices in their homes. And we're going to see the technology now allows us to have them, and a growing set of apps that we download onto our mobile devices that allow us to control all these objects that we never thought we would ever want to control before.
And all these objects that we never thought we'd want to wear before too.
Yes.
We have seen in this last 12 months the beginnings of wearable technology. No doubt that's going to gather momentum in 2014.
Yeah, so we should see a big release in the next couple of months. So wearable technology moves the technology away from a box or a device that we carry with us onto something that we would normally wear or have with us. One of the devices that are really going to take, well, that will come into the marketplace this year is Google Glass. It's a pair of non-prescription glasses that we'll wear, and you can get prescription ones, we're told, within a few months of its release, that will allow you to move the information you might see from your normal telephone screen into the heads-up display of the glass inside the pair of spectacles that you're wearing. So you'll be looking straight ahead, and through the glass you'll see additional information. That is set to take off this year. They've made an announcement for that. But we're also starting to see a whole lot of smart watches come onto the marketplace. It's a watch that, again, moves the information away from the traditional mobile screen onto your wrist. Now, that smartwatch has been something that's been in the marketplace for the last 6 months or so. Many manufacturers have them. I still think they're a bit kitschy. I haven't really found a great purpose. In fact, I had one of these in 2008, 2009 that was better than what we currently are getting. They've got a long way to go. And the glasses, I think, even though we'll see them this year, will not really take off in a big way for another year or 2 years. They need to find purpose.
Right.
They need to find purpose, and I think they're going to be really kitschy in the beginning. I mean, it will be a strange thing
like
to see
people... Like just daggy. People are not going to feel a bit silly wearing them.
It's a strange thing, I think, to walk around the streets and to see people wearing them the same way as
it used to be. I thought people would feel funny with these massive mobile phones too, but no.
Well, absolutely, and also with the earbuds. I remember a conversation not so long ago of people saying, you know, how can people walk around the streets with earbuds in their ear listening to music all the time? But now we've taken it for granted. And in fact, if you take public transport, it's really difficult to find somebody that's not wearing them. In other words, it's become common mainstream. I think these will with time, but I don't think we're going to see a huge influx. I mean, I'll buy them, of course. My mates will buy them. All the geeks and nerds will buy them. But I think it'll take a while until they really have a sensible purpose.
And the rest of us will worry that you're, you know, filming things that we don't know about it. Or, the wearable technology idea and the idea of being able to, for instance, as I say, film somebody in public doing something without their knowledge raises a few interesting questions.
It does, but still we can do that now. Now, I'm not excusing because I absolutely agree with you. There are lots of things that we need to be concerned about with this. We're seeing legislation in advance of their release already in America and in Europe banning some of the elements of this, one of them being this filming in public spaces, filming in casinos, filming at schools. And I would say that in our Australian legislature, we need to look at this as well and understand what is and isn't permissible and perhaps put some laws around it. But you also then take this device that seems a bit frivolous and you take it into a workspace. And I did some work with one of the police forces a couple of weeks ago. You know, in the next 12 months, it will be possible for police officers to walk around the street and to have information given to them in real time as they're seeing what's happening and also be able to relay that back. I know a number of surgeons who are now using this Google Glass or other equivalent technology whilst they're operating, and it's giving them real-time information about what's happening in front of them, much the same way they would have used a microscope before. They're now able to do it heads-up display. Of course, pilots have been using similar technology for a decade or more, so there is purpose in this. It's a matter of being balanced and finding that purpose for it.
You're listening to Nightlife, Kate O'Toole with you, and I'm speaking with futurist Morris Mizarski. You can share your future predictions for the next 12 months, what you think will become more important, less important, the trends you expect to see, perhaps in fashion or food or technology, the sorts of things you think will change around your neighbourhood. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, 1300 800 222 is the number to call, or you could text 0467 922 702. You think, Morris, that the way we consider our health will change, the way we manage our personal well-being, how will that shift?
It's in for a fundamental shift. We've spent the last couple of hundred years in what I call repair mode. That is, we have learned a great deal about our body with wonderful technicians, wonderful doctors and health professionals who have, when we've told them something is wrong, found a way, wherever possible, to fix it. But traditionally, you and I wait until there is something wrong with us or until there's some physical ailment, and then we'll go and get that done. What we're starting to see with these new devices that we're carrying with us is that we can get forewarning of things that might go wrong. So with a wearable device, for instance, it can constantly be monitoring our blood pressure, our temperature, our breathing, all sorts of other things about our body, and it can be monitoring that for us. Again, only available to us on our screens or our information, not shared with anybody else unless we choose it to be shared. So what's happening in health is that these devices are giving us information. We're understanding how our body works better. We're being culturally taught and educated to look after ourselves better. We are moving into a phase where we will most probably live to 100, and today's generation, those being born now, will live to 100, 120, 150 even, quite easily in good health. One of the astounding figures is that currently we have about 2,700 people over 100 years of age in Australia. By the time we get to 2055, we're going to have 73,000 people over 100 years of age. So we're going to live much longer, much healthier lives, and that's going to be based on the fact that we are constantly be looking at wellness, at monitoring ourselves, at tinkering every day with who we are and what we are.
You're listening to Nightlife. Kate O'Toole with you. Morris Mizalowski is a futurist, and Kevin has given us a call. What sort of a trend do you think we'll see in 2014?
Well, what I was wondering is, with this technology being available, particularly into countries that are ruled and they haven't got a lot of freedom, but the technology will get into those countries. And I was thinking about the fact that it'll be what I'd call the word a levelling of society, where the thing is that we've got the wealthy with all the boards and all the IT, etc. But then this IT is going to move quickly into those places that haven't been prevented from getting it, and the thing is that it'll change dramatically the feelings and attitudes across the world.
What sort of an effect do you think that will have, Kevin?
I think it'll have an upheaval. There is the other aspect too, that it could help the criminal situation, but largely from the education that will come more readily to lots of people that it has been restricted from.
Thank you so much for those thoughts. Interesting idea, Kevin. John has given us a call as well. G'day, John.
G'day, guys.
Your prediction?
My question is, or probably a question or a
prediction.
A hope prediction.
Yes.
That they have computers that you can talk to rather than have to use a keyboard and ask for the information, get on the internet and ask the questions, and they'll come back verbally with the answers.
Right. Do they do that already, Morris?
So we're already pushing down that road. In the mainstream, for John and I, we can't yet do it wonderfully. We have Siri on our Apple phones. We've got other versions on Googles and Android. So we're already starting to do it. But in the high end, which is the government and the army and those sorts of places, they already have that technology working. So it'll filter down the next couple of years. But really what John's pushing to, and he's absolutely right, is what's called semantic search. Semantic search is where not only it will understand what you're saying, but it'll actually understand what it is you want, and it will give you an answer that is much closer. As human beings, we often think something, but it's not logical. Like, where's the nearest coffee? Seems like a quick question to ask. But in fact, coffee means different things to different people, different qualities, different sorts. Semantic search actually understands what you mean by coffee and how far near is, and it will go and look for those answers and bring them back. So we're going to see that, John, definitely in the next couple of years, as well as devices that definitely get rid of the keyboard. We will speak, we'll swipe, we'll do all kinds of things into it.
And Geraldine, a question about 3D printing.
Yes. Am I on air?
Yes.
I wanted to ask what would happen if someone decided to copy gems or medicine or something like that?
Did you catch that, Morris? It was what would happen if somebody decided to copy gems or medicine?
Geraldine, you're absolutely right. This is what we were alluding to before, that we really as a society need to sit down and think long and hard about this. The reality is gems will be more difficult to do, but medicine and other things will, of course, be copyable. This is a 3D printer. In the wrong hands, they will be able to use this for not nice purposes. We will need to put new laws around it. We will need to culturally accept or not accept, hopefully not accept, this as being okay. We're really going to have to work hard, Geraldine, to get you an answer on what this is. As a collective, as a community, we obviously know what we want the answer to be, but we're going to have to put in place some of the structure that makes sure that that happens.
Oh, you mean we have to do work in 2014 as well?
Well, maybe a little bit. And I think governments, of course, need to come to terms with some of this stuff too and begin to put some of the rails in place to make sure that all this stuff is used for niceness.
Morris, been wonderful speaking with you over the last hour. Thank you so much.
Our pleasure. Have a great 2014, everyone.
You too. Futurist Morris Mizalaski has been joining us over the last hour. He's the founder of Eye on the Future.